Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Podcast on the hard road to improve things. So I'm just going to talk about a few things where I've set out to do things very slowly and gradually what the best thing to do has emerged. And I suppose I could have done it first off, but I've had to go through a journey of several intermediate steps before I got there. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is the cognitive rehab. Now, people go, oh, boring. I've done it lots of times. And I suppose the basis of it is going hard, going long, and sort of mixing it. And so what part of the mixing it is slowly getting up to do podcasts and slowly getting the podcast software together and slowly integrating it with driving. So in this instance, normally I'm driving from Katoomba, which is about a kilometer up, down to just a mere 300 meters above sea level, which is Glenbrook. And normally I'm driving down the mountain. This time I'm driving up the mountain because I've got a history meeting I'm going to. I don't know exactly why I'm doing it, but it seems a good idea to go to. And this is, I suppose, the overall planning is saying, I'll be doing this. I can plan to rehab or think about or do things in that sort of space. Now, as I'm getting back to it, it's 40 kilometres an hour. As I'm driving, of course, you'll hear different comments. And of course, 40 kilometres an hour is school zones. And of course, if you don't do that, well, this is not a school zone, I think it's a construction zone. If you don't do it, police really throw the book at you. They're sort of pretty mercilessness, I can't even pronounce that word. Okay, so cognitive rehab. Now, it's one of the things that I've sort of realised in that you can, you sort of do things, you do your next step in line with what you can do. So it's not too stupid and it's not over the top. It's within the zone that you can do. So initially, and I suppose the cognitive rehab, the problem is that the cognition isn't there. And so initially it was just everything I could do to just walk around the house and then go on long walks and so then slowly build it up and just keep on trying. And what's doing, say if I don't know, a notional, but that figure comes to my head, 73% is what's necessary to get back to work, and you're working back and you're going from 6% to 7%, you go, it's you really can't focus on the long term. You've got to really focus on just the tiniest little increment. And it's also the increments sort of like this big maze like building. You're going up to it and you go up and check doors and it closes, you know, that door's closed. You go down the stairwells up again through another thing, and you've only got to reach the second floor of a 20-story building, sort of going up to it. But nonetheless, your working way is up. And then there's a general thing that you listen to echoes and you can sort of, oh, this is going a little bit further, and you can go a little bit further down the hall. And so the big revelation for me, so let's do what there is a severe brain injury and a stroke. And so I can't tell really what the difference is between brain injury and stroke. Stroke is, it's gone, and you're relying on something, or a marvellous thing called neuroplasticity. And this is where the brain rewires, relearns. Now, one of my theories going forward is that there's a lot of what we achieve is achieved by effort and antagonistic processes coming in to give you a very highly tuned, balanced performance. So you may have, you may have a lot of skill in there, but you've got antagonistic factors taking away, meaning that you're looking at other things, your performance is capped. It's sort of like, taxiing. Most people taxi around the tarmac in a jet fighter, and they could easily take off, but they have the ability to maneuver very quickly. They use a lot of fuel doing it, and so what happens is that a lot of people thinking or doing anything have a lot of antagonistic factors, things which pull them back, and then those things that pull them back seen in a different direction give them additional abilities, different ways to change or to pull back or not perform. And so when you've got a performance, you eventually, essentially, what I think is not so much that you're learning new things to do, you learn ways not to fuck up. I think that might be essentially it. And then you've got this complex thing that you've got an objective, and should you do one thing and then not the others, or should you do everything at once? And it's sort of like, if I want to get to a particular direction, I have to cycle there, and so I've got to move my legs, obviously cycling, but you also have to steer, and you've got to steer and cycle, and you've got to do a couple of things at once. And that's where I've sort of, if you can imagine going up the stairwells of inside this massive building that you're trying to get to the top of, and you know, the parties, you can hear the party happening at the really at the top penthouse, and you can see people getting the lift and going up to the party and down again and out, coming out drunk, saying, "Oh, it's a dreadful party, you want to get up there." You're in the stairwell working out how to get up, and one of the things that I came across is this physical training and cognitive training, and I'm going to call it those two things because that's what they're officially called. Cognitive training is CT and physical training is PT, and the genius was to put these two together, and little by little, nothing miraculously happened, but little by little, sort of like it unlocked a little bit, letting me go forward a tiny, tiny amount. And this is going into Michenbury. A whole heap of people with knees, everything was being stuck back together, and they had to get back on their horse. There's people in the pool, and people just being able to walk down a set of rails, you know, ballerina rails either side, just being able to walk there and doing it. It's really interesting, though, that they have mirrors there, and strangely, I do think there's some certain things in there which help, and time, and a bit of a structure going on, a bit of measurement going on. But they had some boxing, and strangely enough, the actual nurses there were instructed to talk to me, and I went through a couple of nurses till I actually found someone who was chilled and laid back enough not to really process too much anything I particularly said. So, coming on that, I sort of knew, if you imagine in this floor, you're just going checking the floors, I knew that there's a couple of things to start to check. Now, and this is strange, obviously, with the heart thing, you want to check that whatever you do, your heart rate stays within the safe zone. Now, this sounds pretty easy. It sounds something like someone can brief you. But there it is. That's heart rate, zone, there. Well, technically I could go across. I just wasn't thought of as a particular lesson, as a take-home important point, although everyone was really watching it, and it was a thing to know. And this is where I spent probably over $100, $20 to go, easily over $100, probably I wouldn't have been there. Well, let's turn 10 times up. Sitting on this godforsaken exercise bike, and of course the exercise facility just thought, crap, we've got a heart person, I'm going to monitor his heart and make sure that just do minimum weight exercises. And now the interesting thing, this is in this person's garage with these weights, the way that they did it made me feel faint. My heart didn't work good enough for it, faint. And keeping the exercise bike on track and looking at these different zones. I think Morpheus was the code, and you put it on your wrist, and you sort of can sort of, from this overall thing, from like there's a focus on that level, but there's almost another layer of people being accepting. So I couldn't get the Morpheus to sync. I couldn't get my mobile phone to work with the software. I couldn't get my log onto the cheap mobile phone provider network. Now, obviously, this all unstuck because the cheap mobile phone network, which is sort of like the cheap version of Telstra, Telstra cheap, Telstra light, so to speak. Telstra's the national carrier out here, like British Telecom or Bell. Telstra's the Australian version of it, and we've got a light, low-cost version. Light, low-cost version only allows you to have one account per email. That's the way it is, even though it doesn't say it in the website. That's the way it is. And of course, I had a low-cost account for my daughter, and of course, myself doesn't go. Now, of course, people, especially if you're in the sort of cognitive fog, people easily press the bloody hell thing, and of course obviously doesn't actually help you solve the problem. So eventually I did solve it and get to a certain point. Still didn't work. The Morpheus software works with Apple but not really with Android. But at any rate, we went through, and there's sort of a blue zone, a green zone, and a red zone. The blue zone is normal up to a certain heart rate, 130 to 140 is the green conditioning zone, and above that is the red zone. Bah! And eventually I sort of learned how to go up there, and initially going up there, my heart didn't actually respond, behave well. So it would go up to a certain point, sit there, and then spike up into red, and then go a bit random. It took a while to go there, but it took a while to learn that key skill. So I had the knowledge that I had to mix and match in the heart key skill, and the actual idea of physical training and cognitive training has been gone before. And I think there's a lot of people, when they're saying about sport, this sport teaches so many other skills. And I think almost anything you do, say like music, teaches a whole lot of social skills, numeracy skills, organisational skills, you know, all these things, discipline. There's almost anything you do, besides primary has its over course. So I had the fundamental thing of doing cognitive skill, cognitive training, and physical training. Now, cognitive training I've been doing obviously separately with podcasts, typing, computing, electronics, volunteering a little bit, trying to work. This is a cognitive skill, sort of being able to sit in a meeting and actually listen and try and integrate what you know and think with what's happening out there, even though it seems like a car wreck. You know, people are driving their cars recklessly, wasting fuel, and this is when I really do feel this, having come from management and military. You go into these community organisations, you go, oh my god, but you've got to learn the social skills. So these are all cognitive things. Then there's physical training. And of course, physical training, I was doing walking and podcast while walking, which unfortunately you would have possibly heard. And so we went across to the gym. And the gym, I was able to actually look and push and integrate and go through the whole process. There's this overall process from business called business process re-engineering, where you look at the process and you re-engineer it all the time. And then there's, from the research lab, there's concept prototype, research prototype, production prototype. It's into, oh fuck, just leave off me, you big truck. What are you on about? So I've got a bit of beep from a truck there. I'm doing okay underneath the speed limit. It wanted me to go faster. Can't, mate. The car in front of me. Yeah, well, you've found out the car in front of you is not going faster. Okay, so we've got all this thing happening. And I suppose the entire thing with this cognitive stuff is that it's almost like being given a deck of cards for Christmas, but there's only 36 cards in the deck, and they don't quite make up the full suits. Some suits are there, other suits aren't quite there. You can play certain sorts of games to a certain point, but then they don't work, and then it's just really crazy, and you just don't know that you haven't got the full deck of cards, so it's really difficult to get across. So, all that precondition, the road there, the understanding of process re-engineering, that you're always looking at a new way of doing things, and then when you're looking at the new way of doing things, you've got this process of get in, prototype it, experiment, work on it, continuously go across it. So what's happened is that I've gone into this brain training, and with the treadmill. So treadmill, and now the thing is that I'm up to 5.5 kilometers an hour for an hour comfortably. And I spoke to someone last weekend, and they said, yeah, I'm a marathon runner, 10 kilometers an hour is comfortable for me. And I was going, oh my goodness. But look, at any rate, there's this combination. Now, there's two aspects to going forward. One is what's called overseas, there's a German study, and it's called CPT, cognitive physical training, but it's cognitive and physical training. And what I've actually done is I've integrated the cognitive and physical, and I've also taken it up to an extreme end. That's when I'm not absolutely fucked tired, and I'll put in a good 3 hours. Sometimes I'll stretch myself, sometimes I'll just put in the 3 hours, set myself a speed which I can manage, not too much, don't push myself, because I've just, my head is saying, it's pull back, trying to work out what you're doing, pushing yourself. So I'm not quite pushing myself there. But and then this is producing a result. And the result is, it's not that the result is incorrect, not the result. There's a difference between significant and valid result. So the result is a genuine result, a genuine improvement, and it's valid. It's just, and it is significant in my context. It's not whether it's significant in the larger context. So we've breached a new zone, so to speak, and this is of going from this very basic, trying to negotiate your advance, and you've got the very basics operating system of must get better. If I look at the overall scheme, it's pretty sad. It's sad in context, in that a lot of people have people helping them every step of the way. They are there helping. Oh, you've improved 0.5% from 4% to 4.5%. That's fantastic. We're there. We're supporting you. None of that for me. It's you're on your own. It is that true sense of abandonment and isolation, whereas you go, as a bit of it, it's sort of a bit of a, what's this abandonment? What's this isolation? Oh, let me actually mathematize it, work it out. And I've sort of almost got a mathematics of abandonment. I sort of understand it mathematically, and sort of a bit like the original Terminator movie where you shot up a bit and you look in the mirror and you look at the mechanical eye like this going forward. It's this sort of that sort of self-assessment, the Arnold Schwarzenegger self-assessment phase to go forward. So it looks as though that I've emerged through this, and I'm at this interesting stage of I call it ICPT, Integrated Cognitive Physical Training Max, or at the maximum level that I can do. I don't have a life coach. In fact, I've got more people who, the opposite of life coaches, that is, tell me all about it. Oh yeah, I'm going to tell you. And then, almost, they basically hang up on you. And sort of, I don't know what they call the something 1,000 or something. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, what would you do? You go ahead. And so we're at a very interesting phase. I don't know what it's going to do for me long term. The thing I sort of I joke in terms of understanding the science end of it. Cognitive training is equivalent to doing Mario Kart to learn to be a performance driver. It's sort of that sort of thing. However, if in your life you do come up against Mario Kart situations, you're set. Obviously, it's not going to help you in the performance driving aspect. And so I often sort of joke, if I have anyone to speak to, that doing all this Brain HQ. So Brain HQ, you log in, you get a training schedule, they give you 5-minute training at certain levels, and say, but in one example is that butterflies may appear to so many milliseconds a butterfly, and you got 5 of them, and then it patches over that thing, and then you have to tap on 3 are identical of those 5. Now, initially, it's a very stark bright brain, they're very different butterflies. Eventually the time drops down and the actual butterfly looks, well, you know, if you saw them, they'd look identical. It's sort of, and the same thing for other things, so the birds coming up, the bird has only got this most subtle difference on it, and it's only in a millisecond, so your brain doesn't get a chance, you don't get a chance to go, I think this is here. Your brain doesn't get a chance to process it. And so obviously it's the computer's having some sort of conversation with your brain, and you just sit back and sort of, you know, go for it, brain. Yeah. Wake me up when you're finished, and you go through. And sort of, I sort of joked in my head saying, this is stupid. You know, I could be doing so many other things, but I'm doing this, and, you know, but I'll be set if I ever have to squish bugs. And of course, what happens is a friend goes around the garden to think, ah, your citrus trees are infested with these stink bugs. Now, there's a couple of... So stink bug is, I think it's overseas, everything. It's a little bug. They're dumb. They're immune. They're rugged. And they fire a toxic gel into your face if you disturb them. If they work out that you are attacking them, they will, all of them, will do it. Now, I know this because I thought... So I was told by this friend, who's all nature's way and that type of stuff, to actually get a completely ineffective pesticide, which I dutifully didn't buy the correct one, then bought the right one, then bought the correct one, and then squirted it. And it was sort of like, I've been squirted with, well, thank you very much. I think I might enjoy some of it. It might sort of long-term cause them to have arthritis or something like that. Certainly not going to interfere with their active sex life, reproducing heaps of new bugs. You know, it's something, and then reading up on the internet, you go, oh my God, here we go again. Someone's saying, here's a method of killing these bugs. Mix detergent and water and squirt them. And of course, you're going, unlikely. And then here's what white oil. I always thought white oil was from a white plant or white. No, white oil is the fact that it looks white because it's oil intermixed. It can be any oil. White oil can be any oil. It's just white oil is a mixture, is oil put into a emulsion. It's white oil means emulsified oil. So you have motor oil, perhaps, which doesn't stick together. So it's just sort of insanely not. And so what happened is that one of the things, cognitive things, is that I've gone out there and sent an odd bug or so. But here, the bugs here are sort of like big fists of hundreds of bugs. And very much sort of, I can almost hear them going, laughing as I sprayed them with this crappy thing, which costs heaps of money. And so I thought, well, just start doing tests. I then got the leaf blower and vacuum thing, because I had many years ago used an old vacuum cleaner and it did suck up. The leaf blower had no effect whatsoever. In fact, the only thing is that you could smell a bit, and of course they didn't like it. They knew leaf blower making heaps of noise, sucking me off. They didn't get sucked off. I didn't suck off. I haven't sucked off a stink bug. Of course, they began squirting the crap out of the end of the leaf blower, left me alone, going, oh shit. And so I went over and said, look, let's do an experiment with fly spray. And of course, it worked a wonder. And of course, then the big clumps were easy to go. And that was it, and the little things were going, I'm not feeling as well, and that began to fall off. Then eventually happening is that these things, well, I have decided I'll do a bit of evolution camouflage. This is a camouflage, and indeed, I've got a tree with thousands of bugs on them, or four trees, citrus trees, and thousands of bugs, not very many citrus fruits at the moment due to these bugs. So they've got little skewers in there, little feeders, and they go in and inject and suck the life out of your tree. And so indeed, it just turns out that this Super Mario has tweeted that, and you can actually physically feel your brain clicking to find them, but you realise that your short-term memory is going to go way back, and you go, oh, I've seen Sue, go get the fly spray, and then, this is obviously the natural people, don't use the fly spray, something that, of course, it doesn't work, so I've used it, and going across, so there's this whole process going up, and I suppose what I wanted to talk about is the fact that you've got these skills, but the skill, you need a trajectory of solutions which work just at the time, and perhaps not knowing what the whole problem is and not knowing what the whole solution is meant that I've got a graded set of solutions which I've worked through. So hopefully over time we'll get across. And I just became aware of a greater set of solutions, because it's not only that I've stuffed up writing research papers. I think I was always pretty bad, dreadful, but I was definitely bad, and I've sort of stepped off, and I've almost stroked my first, I think I'm probably at the fourth attempt of writing the same single. The first one started off with conceptual things and what the conceptual follow that through, and that's just produced. So sort of following the concepts, it meant that I didn't look after certain things like structure and sentence length and structure and blah blah blah. And so one issue of that, that's issue where with any concept I just followed the entire concept around, and this is great because I'm in isolation, and so I don't have a research group or research environment I'm working in, so this was ideal, sort of like the first level. The next level up is a more focused one on themes. The next level after that is realizing, hey, your structure's fucked. Read this paper, and then come across and actually put the sentences into a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet does certain calculations and spits out the paragraphs. The paragraphs go together, and then start to link it together and produce machine, and then put that to Google AI and read it back. And they go, there's this sort of like, holy shit, I can't write anything. I the sentences I read here mean that I've written garbage here. Words missing or concepts missing and stuff like that. And so that's one level. And then this next level, so let's recap. I'm at not too far off Katoomba now. And so there's the cognitive rehab. Not knowing your shit is really an important thing because it means that you go, oh, what do I do now? It's sort of like being a really bad cook with nothing in the fridge, and you're preparing dinner, and you're just preparing. If you really knew how bad you were, I think most people would give up. Is the general story. So there's the cognitive stuff, and now this research paper writing stuff. Now I'm up at this level in which I've actually gone through and written software supported stuff, and then eventually produced something as best as that could go, and then I've given it off to a friend, and they've said, to be honest, this is a bit hard to follow, I can't imagine any of it. And I go, yeah. So what I've gone back to is with the still algorithms in my head about how to actually structure paragraphs and paragraph lengths, I've actually gone back to the just standard writing of a research paper. But this time, I have machine reading live on that research paper, and then paragraph by paragraph, and then realizing, sort of expanding, not only am I missing sentences, letters, you know, words, I have a very clear idea in my head what I'm imagining, but I don't actually put it across. So what happens is that even one sentence gets going. Like, the concept is that science demonstrations add the credibility to science. And so that evolves from multiple steps. In the science staff room, it is the demonstration that persuades the students that science actually works. Now, what happens is that the same concept, but for that concept, I've decorated that concept with a whole series of location, person, process, result. So rather than actually have the raw x equals y, I've given the whole graph to that concept. I've bulked out the sentence, but it's then something that someone can imagine. And so after all this journey, come on, 80 kilometers now, good on you, mate. And what's the time now? 39, about 9 minutes late. I had to drop my daughter there. Yeah, so it's that entire decorating, and then people think, so who thinks, what do they think, rather than just they think X, so-and-so seeing this might say that, And this is the entire thing, is that I think the problem is, yeah, there is stroke, and the stroke has actually crinkled, if you like, created a fuzz or a fog around it. And the fuzz or fog around it is a problem because the actual density of concepts is too great. It's sort of like pouring powdered Gravox on your steak and saying, how's it going? People need it mixed up, moved up, a bit of mood lighting, a bit of few candles, a bit of, for today we are going to serve you a new concept from the restaurant of ideas to put forward. So the issue here is, in all cases, it seems to be that I'm pushing forward. Now, the interesting thing is that because it's sort of like a blessing in disguise, because people have given up on me and I've got no one expecting anything, I do have a open-ended brief to an infinite problem. Isn't that right? You don't want, if the problem's infinite, you don't want a closed-ended brief. And if that makes sense, like, or you don't want an open-ended brief to a closed problem, because both those two things, but this is sort of ideal for, in terms of, I've got an open-ended brief for cognitive reconstruction, brain reconstruction, and I can talk about it and think about it all I want and actually try and work out essentially what people think and say. Now, I suppose the interesting thing is that people apply this all over the place for their loved ones and stuff. Everything's boutique and, oh yeah, can we get this for you, like this. But if you're outside, it's look, there's a bulk standard thing that everyone gets, and so there's this world of bulk standard generic stuff like that. And like, if you're not typical, oh, I think we've found, discovered the problem, you're not typical. For that's almost a crime for them. And I just check that out. No, check it out here, or just about, I'm almost there. So that's been speaking. I think everyone really has to get in and do, be sensitive to not being typical. I think the idea of once people start talking about the typical, what's expected and what normally happens, it's really sort of the dying embers of an argument in which they've concluded with themselves that they're not giving you any space. I don't know how to put that. They've gone through a process. I think a lot of people, or as far as I'm concerned, go through an argument process, a thinking process, in which you might be there, but you're not there to represent yourself. You might be there in their thoughts, as a subject of their thought, but that's it. You're there as a subject of their thought. And they go through the process of saying, they're looking for a conclusion. They're looking for, I suppose, evidence for the conclusion. Seeking evidence for a conclusion is really seeking evidence for a proposition, so the proposition can be a conclusion, can be decorated as a thing. So they have a proposition that they're not going to help, and therefore they start wrapping around in the drawers of the typical, the neurotypical. The neurotypical person does this, they don't need this, etc. Okay, I'm going to have to stop now as I go through the delicate thing of finding a bloody car park here at Katoomba. Thanks a lot for listening. It's taken 32 minutes to get here. Thank you.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.